This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here. This week, I'm joined by my colleague, whatever. Anyway, this
joined
week,
with,
I'm
joined by my colleague.
I know, I can never get that right. I got Susan Simpson here. Hey, Susan, how are you?
And for those of you who don't know, Rabia once got pushback from grammatically inclined listeners. I forget which way you said it, but it was the wrong way. And I honestly can't tell apart anymore which one's right, which one's wrong.
I have no idea. They both sound, to me, joined by sounds wrong. Joined with, I don't
joined
know.
Anyway, y'all know what the right one, I think. But whatever, they both sound fine to me.
We're all here.
Anyway,
we're all here. How are you doing?
I'm good. Moving on from grammatical news. So while you were in Colorado, a lot happened this week.
Yeah, let me just, I actually want to tell my listeners a little bit about what I was doing in Colorado, and then let's get into the news, because I thought this might be of interest to folks. There's this organization called the Aspen Institute. They're really kind of interesting. They're nonpartisan or bipartisan, nonpartisan, I guess is the way to do it. But basically all they do is they do all these really great programs around like policies and topics. So I started getting involved with them a few years ago, going to the programs that I was invited. And so I'm now part of this. It's something called the Vanguard Board, which is kind of a diversity thing. And then once a year we get together. It's a group of younger, I say that, you know, rolling my eyes, I'm not that young, but compared to the rest of the constituency in Aspen leaders, we get together once a year in Aspen, Colorado, which is gorgeous on their campus. And you know what we did this year? We had 3 days of, we were led by John Simpkins, who is a constitutional scholar, law professor, brilliant guy, worked, I think, in the Obama White House. I don't know. He led us in 3 days of examining like the foundational texts of the United States and the ideas that kind of, you know, what were the values? What were the ideas? Who was involved? Why were those people involved? Who was in the room? Who wasn't in the room? It was really cathartic. First of all, to get away from the toxicity, but also to kind of get a long historical lens of this stuff. And I realized, you know, every so often we got to go back and look at that stuff. It gave me a lot of hope, let's just say, that I normally don't feel going day to day, having revisited some of our foundational documents, having seen a lot of the stuff, I mean, like read about the struggles. You know, I read, we went through Frederick Douglass' speech that he gave on the 4th of July titled, "What is the 4th of July to a Slave?" And, you know, it was like, yeah, we've seen worse days is what I'm trying to say, America. We can do this.
I guess you had to be there and feel the optimism.
Yeah. It's good to get a longer view on things sometimes. So anyhow, now tell us how everything is falling apart, Susan Simpson. Let's get into it.
You know, yesterday I was one of the strangest news days that has happened in this whole 2015 to now saga. I'm not saying something. Okay. I was only intermittently online. So I checked like every hour or two, like every 2 hours I got an update. And I could not tell what was going on the whole day. It turns out that no one could tell what was going on.
Oh, this is the Rod Rosenstein thing,
like,
right?
I'd get like 2 minutes, I'd see like he's resigned, and I'd check again in like an hour or two. He's not resigned. He's going to the White House right now to get fired. Or I still honestly have no idea.
And Trump wasn't even at the White House. I mean, like I was traveling, so I was checking every so often, but I kept seeing weird, I couldn't understand what was happening. But Trump wasn't there. He was in New York.
It sounds like everyone was confused. Everyone probably is still a little bit confused. They've kind of pieced together now what's happening. It's not clear if he's going to be fired or resign. He's not at this moment.
So I read that he offered to resign.
That may be true, but I don't know if anything's confirmed right now because there have been so many statements flying around. But we should back up to explain why this happened. And that's because last week, 2 weeks ago, a month ago, a century ago, at some point between the op-ed and now, the New York Times released an article that a lot of people have been pushing back against, and the New York Times has defended pretty strongly about how Rosen...
Wait, what op-ed are you talking about? Since
The op-ed. The anonymous White House senior official.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Okay, the op-ed. Got it. Okay.
The forever known as the op-ed. No qualifier necessary.
Okay.
It's like the Madonna of op-eds.
Noted. Okay.
Anyway, this article from the New York Times described how Rosenstein had, about 2 weeks into his position, so like mid-May-ish, had one... suggested wiretapping or putting a wire in someone to go talk to the president, and two, had suggested like forming a coalition to invoke the 25th Amendment against Trump.
Mm.
And all hell broke loose. And by hell, I mean more mass confusion. Now, the New York Times is staying by their article.
Right.
The DOJ itself released a statement. That article from the New York Times was based on sources who were briefed on or read memos written by people who were in the room when this happened. The only source that was actually in the room at the time this happened says that the comments were sarcastic. It's not clear yet. It may not be for a while what the actual story
is. And this was... It was pretty soon after Rod Rosenstein was assigned to this matter, right?
It was right after Comey was fired. We think about May 15th, roughly. So there's one report that I've not seen, like, refuted necessarily, that says what happened was McCabe was suggesting taking more forceful measures against Trump. Like, more, I don't know how you phrase it, like, just more against Trump. And apparently Rosenstein responded, "What do you want me to do, Andy? Wiretap the president?"
Got it. Okay.
And if that's what happened, that seems to me it's pretty clearly sarcastic.
That's not a real question, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like get real, buzz off.
Right.
And that's concerning if that's the case, because in which case New York Times reporting seems very dubious. They claim they've been working on this for like a year now, so it's not new. As far as we can tell, I think this part is pretty much accepted. This is all based on memos that Andy McCabe wrote about the meeting. Now, maybe he was serious. I mean, to be honest, like, if you're going to suggest wiretapping the president and, like, forming a coalition to invoke the 25th Amendment, you'd have to be a pretty interesting person. And to me, that kind of rules out Rod Rosenstein. Like, nothing he's done has indicated he's that kind of guy. He denies it. He said that it's false reporting or something like that. You know, and
to, I mean, that must have inflamed the White House, of course.
Well, the response from Fox was interesting, because you have Hannity on the one hand going, like, it's a trap, Trump, don't do it. It's New York Times setting you up.
Oh, yeah.
And then Laura Ingraham's like, Hero, go ahead and fire him. Go fire him now.
Right. Trump was getting mixed messages, like, in the same day, right? Ingraham and Hannity were giving him different orders.
Yeah, it was very strange. And so there's two options here. One, New York Times is right, in which case I don't know what Rod Rosenstein was thinking, or, like, that's very odd and there's a lot more going on we don't know about. He did not.
Let me ask you something. What? Let's say they're right. If they're right and he actually made that suggestion, would such a suggestion in the course of a criminal investigation be, is it, like, illegal for him to do that? If he were able to get, like, whatever warrant required, I don't know if you need, I guess you need a warrant to do that. But if in the pursuit of investigations, law enforcement authorities do these kinds of things.
They do. Not against the president. Not against your boss. I don't know.
Like, it could. Okay.
It's not them saying. So there's two issues now. One is, like, if he did suggest it seriously and he's denying it, that's kind of problematic. The other is that
it didn't happen.
Well, we just don't know enough about, like, the conversation. Like, it could be he did suggest it seriously. I mean, if it was the 25th Amendment, well, that's interesting, because it's the first time we have confirmation of a named person who considered invoking it, even though we all know that everyone around Trump has, like, at least floated the idea to themselves. The 25th at some point. So it's mostly notable because Rosenstein has somehow worked out a truce with Trump, where Trump was, like, kept him around despite everyone thinking he'd be fired long, long ago. And this would undermine it, which is why there's been pushback on the New York Times, because it seems like it could have been planted by certain people who had an interest in killing the Mueller investigation. And to do that, they needed Nix Rosenstein. So the accusation is that the New York Times was acting as, like, you know, stenographer or patsy for these forces who wanted to use their platform to influence Trump, based on a story that's not entirely accurate because the comments were clearly sarcastic. Again, New York Times has said they are very certain this is not the case. And I guess now we just have to wait and see what evidence comes out, or see if next week, or if Rosenstein's still around, if he testifies this week before Congress.
Could the New York Times be made by the DOJ to give up their sources?
Yes. Well, sort of. I mean, it goes back to, like, the whole Judith Miller thing.
I mean, Trump could order that, right? Trump could be like Sessions.
It would be a huge protected fight. I mean, they probably would, you know, from the New York Times' history, they'd probably have the reporters go to jail for contempt before they disclosed it. But also, Trump is not interested in disclosing these sources necessarily. He's interested in finding out what the McCabe memos say, which up until now, supposedly, the White House has not seen them. And they really want to know what's in those McCabe memos.
Were those the documents last week he was going to declassify, and then suddenly that went away? Or those were different documents that he just ordered? Remember? He ordered a whole cache.
Oh, God, I forgot that happened. That was huge. That just happened, like, recently.
Yeah. well, let's talk about it.
That might have been included. I cannot remember. I know. Okay, so a few days ago, or the 17th, apparently, there was a statement from the press secretary that was released. And it said, at the request of a number of committees of Congress and for reasons of transparency, the president has directed the Office of the Director of National Intelligence and the Department of Justice, including the FBI, to provide for the immediate declassification of the following materials. 1. Pages 10 to 12 and 17 to 34 of the June 2017 application to the FISA court in the matter of Carter W. Page. 2. All FBI reports of interviews with Bruce G. Orr prepared in connection with the Russia investigation. And 3. All FBI reports of interviews prepared in connection with all Carter Page FISA applications. In addition, Donald J. Trump has directed the DOJ to publicly release all text messages related to the Russia investigation, without redaction, of James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, and Bruce Orr. So, this is a big deal because, one, presidents don't do this. Two, this is a guy who is ordering materials related to investigation into himself to be given over to him and the public at large. Three, FISA materials are never released, like, ever. Like, since it was enacted in, like, 72, whatever it was. This is not what FISA is supposed to do. FISA is supposed to be secret. It's to catch bad guys, foreign spies, basically.
Right.
And occasionally domestic personnel who are acting on behalf of foreign powers as a spy, like in the case of Carter Page. And also, we've been through this whole fucking rigmarole before with the Nunes memo and also with the previous release of most of the FISA applications, with some pages redacted still. So really, this is just carrying on a bullshit conspiracy theory way farther than it needs to go. And ultimately, it turns out nothing happened at all because this was not actually a declassification order. Trump's statement did not declassify these items. It was just basically like a request that anyone in the country could make for declassification. And then the FBI... FBI went and talked to him, apparently, and talked him down from the ledge and told him that we can't do this because, in part, that would cause us to release information belonging to key allies.
Got it.
So okay. He did not do it.
Do you know if Sessions had any involvement in any of this? Or has he just been...
He better not.
Okay, so he's because he's supposed to have recused himself. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like around the same time, he also went on another public attack against Sessions. It could have been the week prior. I get these things confused. So, Susan, it is late at night, and I'm assuming you want to know what I'm wearing right now, right?
Yes. Rabia, tell me what you're wearing right now at 11 o'clock at night.
I am wearing some of the coziest socks I've ever owned right now on my feet. I'm wearing Bombas socks, and I'm not just wearing them because it's finally fall and the weather's gotten cool, but I have been rocking my Bombas socks for the last week because exactly 1 week ago, I started working out with a personal trainer. The socks make a big difference. The shoes gotta fit well, but the socks have to fit well. Well, here's the thing. They have like a built-in arch support system. It gives extra support like where you need it. And it feels like it's completely just like hugged around your foot and it doesn't slip, all right? The footbed has a cushion, it's reinforced. There's no bulkiness. I hate those thick sport socks that just, they don't fit. And it feels like I'm wearing like pads on my feet. I don't like it. The toe's seamless. There's no little annoying bump. Honestly, it just, I have realized like too late in life that just having comfortable like footwear, socks, and all athletic wear, it's all important for this kind of stuff.
I am now super in love with like the Bombas ankle socks. They are amazing. They stay in your ankles. Like most ankle socks, they just slip down over your toes and you're like, okay, this sucks. I'm done. They're the best ankle socks in the history of the world. I am not exaggerating.
It's interesting because they're like, you would think you need like thick socks to stay up, but
they're thin,
these aren't thick socks either.
And they stay up at your ankles. Yeah. I don't even know. They have like a little like rubber tread or something. I don't even know.
Whatever all that technical stuff is, we love our Bombas socks.
It works.
It works. And the other thing I love about it is that they are so generous because for every pair they sell, they donate a pair. Socks are actually the number one most requested item in homeless shelters, especially now as it's going to get cold. But obviously you can't donate used socks. So Bombas donates one brand new pair of socks for every single pair that they sell. And to date, they have sold and donated over 9 million pairs. So for our listeners, you want to do something good for yourself and for somebody in need, buy some Bombas socks. So what you got to do is go to bombas.com/45th. That's Bombas, BOMBAS.com. And you will get 20% off your first order. Bombas.com/45th. And don't forget the code 45th. I one of the big stories that has been circulating heavily online the last couple of days is a new article out by the New York Times. The New Yorker, excuse me. And it's actually a profile. The article is called How Russia Helped to Swing the Election for Trump. It's actually a profile of a book that's coming out a couple of weeks before the midterms, so late October. The book is called Cyber War, How Russian Hackers and Trolls Helped Elect a President, What We Don't, Can't, and Do Know. It's written by Kathleen Hall Jamieson. She's a professor of communications. She's a social scientist. She is known by all accounts to be strictly nonpartisan. Like, her colleagues are like, we don't even know politically like where she stands or what she believes in. But she has been a data and election nerd for a very long time, well before this election. And so she was asked a number of times, I mean, during 2016 and afterwards, to kind of like do some, you know, like dig down and write about it. And she spent enough time like really getting the data and trying to like, you know, study the patterns of what happened in 2016 with Russian interference, that she's like, she turned it into a book. So the book's going to come out before the midterms, which I think is great timing. Not that I know if it's going to change people's minds, and I'll tell you why. I think it's because of the findings of the book. So we all know, obviously, that, you know, Trump completely calls all of this Russian interference stuff. He's like, it's a hoax. It's made up. He's very threatened by it. In fact, his aides say that he will not even discuss you know, the possibility of Russian interference in terms of changing election outcomes. Now, in this article, the New Yorker says that normally Congress would like examine an electoral controversy of this size. But, you know, the official investigations have kind of gone nowhere at this point. But what this social scientist have found is this. She found a really interesting pattern about around the times of the presidential debates. And essentially what she said is some of the initial worries were that Russia did some direct election interference, right? Hacking things. I mean, and I've seen stories about like discrepancies at different polling stations and this and that. And she's like, the data doesn't support that. But what it supports is this, that Russia was incredibly, incredibly effective at hacking people and hacking opinions. She said one of the things that, I mean, she measured people's responses to Clinton specifically and how they felt about her truthfulness based on the kind of stuff that was like, you know, correlating it to like what now is circulating on Facebook and things like that. And she said that even though most people agreed that Clinton won the debates, for some reason, a lot of people who are especially undecided or kind of like in the fringes of both parties felt more and more that she was untruthful and untrustworthy after every single debate. And she said that's counter to how normally people are more, she won the debate. So normally people are more in, you know, favorable towards the person who won the debate, but she lost points on those issues. And then she correlates it directly to the kinds of things that, you know, like things that are circulating, especially on Facebook. She also says something that literally like just made me almost fall out of my seat. She said basically that Trump won the Electoral College by only 80,000 votes. It was 80,000 votes in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. That's it. 80,000 votes that won him the Electoral College, which is more than a comfortable margin for the amount of people that any of these, you know, Russian bots and stuff, they're able to change the minds of that many people easily. And I was kind of shocked to read that. I don't think I was as surprised with the other findings, but the effectiveness, she said, I mean, basically she's posed the question in this interview. She said, if there wasn't Russian interference, would he have won? And she said, no, basically that's her conclusion here.
I will say I'm deeply skeptical. I have not read the book, so I can't comment on her methods or her findings.
What are you skeptical about?
Oh, the whole idea that the like online disinfo campaign couldn't itself be like the causal factor of Trump winning.
That's what she said. She said it was.
But I'm very skeptical of that claim. Again, without having read the book, I can't really comment on her evidence or her claims there, but nothing I've seen supported it. I am still more interested in the Russian hacking efforts. For instance, we know that they did repeatedly hack into the voting roll system. We don't know what that's about yet because that's not been fully investigated because Congress does not care. I don't want to totally diminish the effect of the Facebook and online campaigns either, because those things do matter. They are effective. Otherwise, people wouldn't pay millions of dollars for them.
Yeah. So I mean, I'll be honest. I remember seeing liberals post stuff about Clinton. The people who were like supporting Bernie and were like, they would use those same stories to say, I don't care. I will not vote for Clinton. And I think it caused Democrats to not vote to some extent.
Maybe. And like, the stuff does have some effect because otherwise people wouldn't pay a lot of money for it. At the same time, if it did have an effect, I think it's more of a coincidence than anything. It's just a bad confluence of factors. I don't think the disinfo is as effective as this book seems to be claiming it was. I do think it's effective at sort of stoking media narratives, which I think is the real point of all this. It's not about influencing voters. It's all about influencing media.
I mean, she ties that into it as well. I mean, the book's not out. I haven't read it. I just read the review. But she said that the media was complicit in helping to continue to spread the same kinds of concerns, whether it was about Clinton's health, whether it was about – and she even notes, for example – in two of the debates, two of the questions posed to Clinton, like she gave an answer about something. And then in two of the questions posed in response to her answer, whoever like was moderating the debate, like they challenged her and basically said, well, you're saying this, but you said X, Y, Z in 2013, like, you know, but the information that they were using was based on the leaked emails from WikiLeaks. And so, you know, they were using things. I mean, she had said something like, you know, it's very common, and Lincoln did it too, that there are things you say publicly, there are things that you believe privately, and sometimes you have to, that's part of being political, right? And being a politician and getting your way towards something. And so they used that against her. I mean, so definitely, you know,
that
the media played along.
That mattered. I think that the whole like Clinton email thing, that narrative that took over and was the sole like narrative push on Clinton for 8 months, that did matter a lot. And to the extent that Russia.
And she made the argument, the scientist makes the argument that if Russia had equally hacked Trump's emails and we had seen releases of like, you know, Manafort's email, like all these different things going on, she was like, we would have had a different outcome. So certainly.
On the other hand, the media was invested in playing the horse race, so who knows if they would have gotten the kind of coverage. On the other hand, though, I think that we have not fully heard where I think Russia was most successful, and I think that's in how they played the FBI. We know that there was a false email. It was fraudulently, like, it was forged, basically, by the Russians, and they pretended to, like, have it captured by the U.S. So the U.S. thinks they're getting intel from Russia, and they think they've obtained emails from Russia that Russia obtained from the U.S., and they purport to show that Clinton was conspiring with Loretta Lynch to, like, not investigate the email controversy. And I know Comey has denied it, but I am not convinced by that denial, necessarily. And it seems like there's a whole story there we have not gotten into. And that is much more concrete evidence of, like, that did conceivably impact election hugely. Whether or not it affected Comey, who knows? But Comey's decision to reopen the Clinton email investigation in October, seems like it could have been influenced by his belief based on the email that his legitimacy and the FBI's legitimacy would be undermined if he did not try and do an objective show of good faith here by reopening the case when he shouldn't have.
It's 80,000 votes is a slim margin. I think all of these things, you know, had played into it, but I mean, it was kind of a coup. I mean, like, this is like a bloodless, you know, no military involved coup in a way. Russia.
It's.
Is it not a coup? Do you not think Trump
is
like an agent of Russia?
It's a foreign interference operation.
With our Manchurian candidate, like, leading the country. Like, you've got the guy who's, like, a couple of degrees from a Russian agent, I would.
It's not a coup. I mean, it was a disinfo campaign that may have worked to some degree. I don't think it was decisive. Given how small the difference was, I guess, yes, anything could have mattered. But I don't think in most elections there's a realistic chance of that kind of operation swaying things. I think mostly it was the media.
Look, I'll tell you this. Some of the social media work I've done, because I've worked with Google and Facebook on countering violent extremism campaigns and looking at how social media is used in foreign countries, too, by other. Because, you know, in other countries, authoritarian governments can manipulate social media, you know, and shut down access for citizens to be, like, participatory. It has an impact. It really does. I mean, whether it's, like, recruitment by violent extremists, this is a form of recruitment in many ways, right? So I do think the social media stuff is very impactful. But, you know, maybe we'll get more. I would say everybody check out the New Yorker article, you as well, Susan. I believe in data. And this woman sounds like, this is what she does. So I just think when you have such a slim, well, I will say this at the end of the day, flippin' everybody, please register to vote. Make sure you're registered. Check it twice and vote. That's what it comes down to. This is not a margin that it can't be overcome. right? If it was such a slim margin, that's something that shouldn't be able to stop us, like, you know, in getting it right the next couple election cycles. All right. So Trump today was the General Assembly is gathered in New York this week, and Trump was going to address it today. He arrives late. I don't know why. No answer given as to why he arrived late. So they just plugged in the president of Ecuador to fill in his spot. But anyhow, he spoke. He actually tweeted out this morning, though. He was already in New York, like I said, the other day. I think he went to New York yesterday when Rod Rosenstein, the same day, you know, he popped up at the White House. I don't know. Who do you think Rod Rosenstein was speaking to at the White House, by the way, while Trump is away?
Kelly. It was Kelly.
Kelly? Okay. So Trump tweets out this morning, we'll be speaking at the United Nations this morning. Our country is much stronger and much richer than it was when I took office less than 2 years ago. We are also much safer. Now, he tried to sell a similar idea at the UNGA, and he was laughed at. So let's take a listen to this exchange.
1 year ago, I stood before you for the first time in this grand hall. I addressed the threats facing our world, and I presented a vision to achieve a brighter future for all of humanity. Today, I stand before the United Nations General Assembly to share the extraordinary progress we've made. In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true.
He played it off.
He did. He's like, I mean, it's just like, ugh. I mean, the bad part of this is probably that he is going to, like, even more hate the UN now.
Oh, my God. He's going to burn it. He's going to, like, set fire to it before he leaves.
I mean, that's kind of what that speech was. It was, like, basically attacking the multilateral order. Like, he is attacking the liberal world order as we know it and trying to replace it with, like, a rule-by-power approach like Russia and China want.
Yeah, and very isolationist and very nativist. He went on about the ideology of globalism, multinational authorities. He said that national sovereignty, the need for countries to pay their own defense, were, like, they override the need for, like, multilateral cooperation on defense issues and other things. He also said that, you know, other nations should look out for themselves. The U.S. should do its own thing. The quote is, I honor every nation to pursue its own customs, beliefs, and traditions. And we've heard this before. The United States will not tell you how to live or work or worship. We only ask that you honor our sovereignty in return. That was a weird line to me because, you know, he makes the argument that we don't want to pay for other nations. We don't want to pay into these multinational organizations and, like, foot the bill for all this shit. But when he says the U.S. will not tell you how to live or work or worship, like, who is telling the U.S. how to do any of those things?
Trump thinks they are by not respecting our status as a superpower and giving us whatever we want under threat of being annihilated by us. To Trump, that's not respecting us and our beliefs.
But I do think that everybody in the world considers the United States to be the supreme superpower.
Well, Trump thinks that if that was the case, then we would get our way in everything and that they'd have to, like, pay us to exist, basically. And that's not happening because he does not believe in a multilateral world, which we're one country among others, equal in our sovereignty to other nations. Like, that, he does not believe in that world concept. He believes in a world that power gives you more. And he wants the U.S. to use its power to get more. Not understanding that our entire, like, economic system relies on having international markets that are part of a free and vibrant liberal world order. So if he got what he wanted, it would not
be
what he wanted.
Right. Tear down the post-World War II order. He said that the U.S. will not be taken advantage of any longer. He says that other nations ripped off the U.S. on trade and defense spending. I was like, you know, you're just, like, in the middle of this assembly of other nations. And he went on, and I thought this was interesting. So I read a report yesterday saying that Trump was going to be meeting the Ayatollah. I don't know, or a couple, like, something. I saw a blip as I was traveling, and I was like, what? How? Or he wants to meet the Ayatollah or something. Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yesterday, there was a report that said President Rouhani said that he refuses to meet Trump. He said that. And then Trump tweeted, despite being asked, because, you know, he does this, despite being asked, I will not meet Rouhani, even though I'm sure he's a lovely man. He tweeted this, I think, yesterday.
Wait, really? This is totally news to me.
Oh, yeah.
I did not even catch this at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, after the report came out that Rouhani's like, I will not meet this man, he then goes on, and Trump goes on to say, I was asked to, but I refused to meet him. And also, I'm sure he's a lovely man. He actually tweeted that. And then this morning in his speech, he said, Oh, boy. He said, Iran's leaders sow chaos, death, and destruction. They do not respect their neighbors or borders or the sovereign rights of other nations. Instead, their leaders plunder the nation's resources to enrich themselves, blah, 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 blah. So the reporting says that, oh, yeah. So it was just a few, it was this morning, a few hours after Trump tweeted that he was sure that Rouhani was a lovely man. He also said that the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, will be reviewing foreign assistance to other nations and henceforth only give funds to nations that, quote, respect the U.S. and are friends.
Nice to him is what he means. This is Trump's view of how U.S. should use its power to bully and bribe other countries into obeying our whim of the moment. He's basically going to condition.
So who would that leave? Who is our friend, Susan?
Kim Jong-un, duh.
Okay. Russia.
Russia, too, a little bit. Russia, we're kind of iffy on still because there are enough people in the administration who are like aren't Russia lovers that
right.
They're like lower tier. Our highest tier friend right now is Kim Jong-un.
Yeah. I mean, this is very, very similar to I remember when Nikki Haley said that the United States was challenged on different UN resolutions. She's like, you know, we're making lists, basically, of people who are supporting us and voting against us. And I feel like if that's your... I guess only countries that will not say a word about Trump or the administration or ever act against any of his agenda will get money now.
It basically means they can't talk out against Trump or probably other
American policies.
Too. Yeah, mostly it's like, don't be mean to Trump if you want to get money. On the other hand, I saw some news earlier that Macron was from France was suggesting that no one have trade deals with countries that aren't part of the climate change accords.
Okay, that's one way to go about it.
That would be three countries. That would be like us and like two others.
Right.
One other maybe.
But that's what's going to happen then. That is the kind of retaliation we are going to experience.
So I like nice clothes, but also I'm kind of lazy and I don't like doing anything to get good clothes.
But you don't want to go to the effort.
I don't want to, like, trying on clothes in stores sucks. I'm sorry. It's just a lot of work and a lot of hassle. And, like, it's not that I don't like wearing nice clothes, but I don't want to have to go out and get them, which is why Stitch Fix...
You don't have time. You're out saving the world.
That's my excuse. Yes, I'm far too busy to deal with, like, pedestrian needs, like clothes shopping. Luckily, Stitch Fix is there to fix everything.
I heard you really loved your Stitch Fix box.
I did, and I was super skeptical because, like, what you do is you go to the site and you give them, like, your clothing style, your clothing, like, habits, some, like, clothing you like, and just fill a little form, and, like, it's a survey, and they pick the clothes for you and send them to you. I'm like, we'll see how it goes. They did it amazing. It was weird how much the clothes, like, fit exactly my style. Like, you couldn't even tell.
Well, I gotta say, I mean, for people who are not in the know, if you hang out with Susan Simpson, she is always styling and profiling. So I know these items have to be nice. Can you tell us a little bit about what you got?
The best thing was, so when you choose, like, what kind of clothes you want, you can say, like, I want to match my current style or make it a little bit wild. And I was like, mostly my current style and, like, a little bit new stuff, because that'd be cool. Mm-hmm. And, like, three of the pieces I got were exactly my style to the point. I'm like, wow, this is kind of creepy. Are they spying on me? And also, they're like, apparently they knew me too well because they chose for me clothing that's all dry clean free.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So it fit perfect for my style. It looks nice. I can be an attorney in it and all that, but also it's like low maintenance, which is what I needed. But you can't tell it's low maintenance, even better. So I got a lovely dress. I got a faux wrap dress, which I actually haven't really worn before. And I was a little skeptical until I tried it on. Like, oh, that looks pretty good, actually. And then a lovely cardigan that looks great with all my existing clothes too. So yeah, I am thrilled with these guys. I was so thrilled, in fact, that I got one for my husband because
it's
a great idea because, like, I don't know.
Has he gotten his box yet?
Not yet, but I don't do clothes, so I figured they know better than me. And there we go.
I think one of the most awesome things is that they actually pair you with your own personal stylist. So if you have something, like, you can actually communicate with this actual human being on the other end. It's not just an algorithm, you know. And I got my box. The clothes are beautiful. And I loved, you got that little letter, right?
Yeah. Mine was just like, we know you're busy. So here's stuff that's really easy to take care of. And it looks nice. Here you go. I'm like, I feel seen and judged.
Seen and judged. Well, Stitch Fix is great for people on the go. It's great for people who are busy. There's no subscription required. You can try stuff on, return what you don't maybe want to keep, and, you know, shipping, exchanges, returns, always free.
So get started now at stitchfix.com/45th, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all 5 items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th to get started today. stitchfix.com/45th.
that actually can move us very nicely into the next story, which is all about the kind of retaliation that we are dealing with because of Trump's policies. And this is a story about government bailouts for farmers this year. What's happened
is apparently Rouhani is now talking at the UN.
And UNGA?
He just said that Trump has, quote, a Nazi disposition.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, coming out strong.
That's
bold.
And coming from a country where a previous president was like a Holocaust denier, I'm like, okay, it's progress. It's progress.
Should we to confirm Iran? Is that like that's a criticism, right?
Right. Just to make sure. Oh God, whatever. Okay, he's gonna have to follow up. I'm sure he's a lovely man. Tweet. Got to keep an eye on. I bet you he's watching it. Is he live tweeting it?
Of course he.
We got to follow his Twitter account.
I don't want to go to war. Apparently, yesterday there was like a press release that called Iran like an enemy, which is dangerous and not true. I think it's from Pompeo, not Pompeo directly. There's some Department of State like statement that called Iran an enemy, which is
to be fair,
it has a meaning, Iran's and you don't use that term in normal. Like it has a very specific meaning, and we're not going to use it.
It does. I agree. But you get some ugly rhetoric out of Iran too about what they think about. Although I think Rouhani's been much more measured. Yeah. Let's see. Okay. All right. So quickly, I want to talk about this handout, this government bailout for farmers, that tied directly to Trump policies. And then we got to talk about Kavanaugh because there's like more. Trump is tweeting about Kavanaugh. All right. So basically, what's happened is that apparently the United States, on an average, sells 20 million bushels of wheat to China. They've sold 20 bushels of wheat to China over the past 3 years, but not a single one this year. Okay, so think about all the wheat farmers who didn't sell any wheat to China. Because of the tariffs on China, retaliated and said, we're just not going to buy any wheat from you. That's it. So farmers are suffering, and that's just in the wheat industry, but soybean farmers, corn farmers, everything. So the Trump administration is now going to provide up to $12 billion in emergency relief funds. And the first round is going to be about $6 billion. They're going to make payout again to corn, cotton, soybean, dairy, pork, all kinds of farmers who are right now – these are people who are being directly impacted because of Trump's tariff. This is interesting because, a lot of these people are people who helped elect Trump as well. I mean, like they voted for Trump because Trump did promise a lot for farmers. And also I'm sure there are some cultural reasons that they did it. But farmers who are being asked about this are like, they're only going to get about $2,000 a farmer. And this one farmer is like, that's not even beer money. Like, this not going to nearly cover their losses, their tremendous losses. And, you know, despite how they voted or what they believe in, this is devastating. It's going to be devastating for thousands of families across this country. I'm sure we're going to feel the impact as we lose crops, right? Like, he said also as people are applying for this aid, the estimation is nearly 800,000 applications for relief is what they expect to get from U.S. farmers. I mean, how many flipping farms are there? That's almost a million people. I feel like that's almost like every farm in the country.
Did you see the tweets where Trump was saying that his farmers would like stand up to this economic attack because they know that Trump's going to lead them to victory or something, so that they're not going to fall for ruse from China?
What about when they starve? I mean,
that's not a ruse. That's not true. That's not how it's going to work. Like they are, like people are not going to just tolerate and like their financial ruin because they trust Trump to turn the ship around.
And they've said that. I mean, in the interview that from the paper that I read this story on, they're like, we're gonna vote differently now. Like this is gonna make a big difference in the midterms. They're angry and they're scared, and I would be too. So. And this is often like what I think about when I think about the kind of policies that this administration wants to enact. It really hits some of his own constituents the worst, whether it's, you know, healthcare stuff, whether it's government assistance, all of these things, education. It's like you're defunding the programs that, by the way, are not, you in his head. He thinks only like people of color are benefiting from these programs. It's not. It's by and large, lower income white people.
Yes. It's all mostly white people because there's mostly white people in the U.S. So
that works. That's how it works. All right. So Kavanaugh.
Well, we apparently there's been an update that senators were informed they should, stay in town because they're going to confirm them this weekend because they have the votes.
This coming weekend?
Yeah, we'll see. That could be a bluff, but it could be totally true too. You know, like, this is, like, definitely the worst timeline, like, if we need more proof, because now we literally have a situation where trying to figure out when a Supreme Court nominee lost his virginity is, like, a valid reporting topic.
All right. Can we let's just backtrack just a little bit and go over kind of the unrolling of allegations in the last, like, literally, I think over the weekend, right? And then the virginity stuff.
Last week we learned about Dr. Blasey Ford came forward. Right. And then the week after, there's a whole, like, back and forth, like, when's she going to testify? Is she going to testify? What's going to happen? Are they going to vote anyway? Apparently, Trump was, like, telling McConnell, vote Monday, vote now, don't wait. But they ended up, you know, waiting and agreeing to have testimony this upcoming Thursday, so in 2 days. It'll only be two people, though. It'll be Dr. Ford and Kavanaugh. No other witnesses, as of yet, are going to be part of it, which is unfortunate because that's definitely needed to find out what happened here. Sadly, somehow, in the however 30-plus years it's been since Anita Hill, we have backtracked on how we handle this kind of matter for a Supreme Court nominee.
Right.
But also, there are now additional accusers coming forward, apparently. There's definitely one. The New Yorker had a story that I think yesterday? I don't even know anymore.
I think it was two days ago.
Right. About a college classmate, I guess freshman year from Yale, about a woman who says that she was hanging at a party. She was drinking, and at some point, a man, she says is Kavanaugh, exposed himself, put his penis in her face, and another classmate was trying to get her to kiss it. It sounds like a bullying situation. They were a bunch of males, like, you know, homosocial bonding, basically, using her as a target to, you know, express their broness to one another. Kavanaugh has denied it. Trump has claimed that it can't be true because she was drunk.
The White House put out, like, an official statement, I think, in response to the story, didn't they? Which I thought was crazy. Did you see that statement?
Mm-mm.
Isn't it highly inappropriate for them to be making any kind of official statements about, like, this whole nomination, the nominee, the process, any of this? I mean, it's one thing that Trump tweets shit. We know nobody can control crazy old man.
It's not inappropriate for them to have these statements, but it depends on the contents, obviously.
All right.
Obviously, Trump's statements aren't helpful here.
Yeah, there is an official White House statement that basically argues, it says that it's like a two-page bullet point of why she's a liar type of stuff. It's titled this, What You Need to Know About the Allegations Made in the New Yorker Article on Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And then it goes on for about two pages, and it says, the accuser, Deborah Ramirez, states that there were significant gaps in her memory. So it says that she was first hesitant to speak. She had gaps. It goes on about the gaps. Then it says that how she was reluctant to characterize his role in it. And then it took her 6 days to, like, you know, kind of like fortify her memories. And it says that New Yorker has not confirmed with any other eyewitnesses that Kavanaugh was at the party. I mean, it goes on and on. Basically, it's just trying to say that either she's not remembering right or that she's making it up, basically. Like, this is a partisan thing. Because that's another thing, which I thought was interesting, is I'm seeing on social media conservatives circulating how she's, like, a civil rights worker and, like, a woman's rights worker. And, like, these are awful things. And, you know, she's a Democrat. And so turning it into a partisan thing.
And Trump has tweeted out these are false acquisitions, which was later corrected to false accusations. So they're going with these are false, at least with the case of the additional accusers.
Now,
they're trying to walk the line. Oh, we even forgot the whole drama with the doppelganger theory.
That was excellent.
Yeah, so they're basically so far have not called Dr. Ford a liar. They're saying that she is mistaken. And the theory that seems, well, one theory that was circulated for why she's mistaken came from Ed Whelan, from basically he's like, you know, the judicial whisperer for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And he unveiled a Twitter theory that was,
it was a whole thread.
Impressively bad. And it basically said, like, oh, there's a dude in high school that looks just like Kavanaugh, and he's definitely probably the rapist.
And so, he has, like, a diagram of, like, his house. And
I don't even know. He used Zillow. He went to Zillow. It's got to be true.
And got a floor plan and said the floor plan of this guy's house, like, this is where this guy lived. It was close to where I think she lived or something. And he makes but then he retracted and he apologized, because probably because people are like, you're going to get fucking sued.
Yeah. Well, he realized that, like, probably the one way that they could realized that probably the best way to screw this up is for Kavanaugh to be out there making false accusations himself. because that Republicans apparently care about. Now, the real question for me, and we'll find out this week probably, is what Kavanaugh knew about all this. It does not seem believable based on statements from the conservatives and statements from the White House that they did not know what Ed Whelan was up to.
Right, because they had spent the previous few days together, in fact, at the White House, strategizing.
And Ed Whelan is involved in all. Like, it's very unlikely that Ed Whelan – I mean, they definitely knew that Ed Whelan was doing something and had a theory. They're going to claim probably that they didn't know at all about it, but it doesn't seem plausible right now. But we'll, I'm sure some Democrat will ask on Thursday what Kavanaugh knew of all this.
But Kavanaugh, and we're going to get one of those answers where it's so obvious he's lying.
Oh, he's so bad at this. My God. I mean,
he's a bad liar, which I give him credit for.
Not even a bad liar. He's just bad in like responding to questions publicly.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's never been on that side of that issue. I mean, he was confirmed. He has been confirmed before. Actually, that's not true.
And he was a political operative for years and years. What is interesting, though, is apparently Kavanaugh told Orrin Hatch that the woman was mixed up at some point, which suggests he might have been on board with this theory, which I'm sure we'll find out more about soon.
If you follow me online, you know I am quite clear about how important sleep is to me because, well, when you have an 18-month-old, it's always up in the air and you never know if you're going to get any.
Yeah, I was going to say, Robbie, if that's important to you, why do you never do it?
Why do I never sleep? I do. I swear I got to sleep. But you know what? Sometimes, and I'm not kidding, I have spent most of my life tossing and turning just on crappy mattresses because you end up going to a store, you just pick out whatever looks right, feels right at the time, but it has nothing to do with, like, there's absolutely no way to know that this mattress is right for how you sleep, your body, and all of that. But no more issues like that because you don't have to buy a generic mattress that's built for everybody anymore. Thanks to Helix. Helix Sleep has built a sleep quiz that takes 2 minutes, only 2 minutes to complete, and they use the answers to match your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress. Because, you know, some of us run hot, some of us run cold, some of us like to sleep on our face, some of, you know, we all have different sleep needs. Speaking of which, how do you sleep, Susan?
All of the above. I change my mind like 10 times a night.
Oh, husband are good men.
So for couples, Helix can even split down the middle, providing individual support needs and feel preferences for each side. That's a lifesaver, marriage saver. And they have a 10-year warranty and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free.
What more could you want? So check it out right now. Whether you're a side sleeper, hot sleeper, like it plush or firm, with Helix, there's no more guessing or confusion. And right now, if you go to helixsleep.com/45th, just take their 2-minute sleep quiz. You'll get matched the right mattress. And Helix right now is offering up to $125 off every mattress order. So go to helixsleep.com/45th. Once again, get up to $125 off at helixsleep.com/45th. That's helixsleep.com/45th for $125 off your mattress order. Don't miss out on this great offer, helixsleep.com/45th.
That brings us to last night, when Kavanaugh, breaking all tradition, did what no Supreme Court nominee has done before, which is make a media appearance during the confirmation proceedings. And of course, he chose state media, Fox News, where he's not even confirmed yet, and already he's doing the tour of, like, an interview where your wife's by your side to prove she's still there with you.
Right. I wish there was a process by which the sitting justices could be like, no, we will not allow him to join us.
They get a veto vote. Like, we don't want our new...
Do they really?
No.
Oh, damn
like,
it.
It's like, they he's should. Our colleague forever. Like, he's our coworker forever. We get a say here, right? No. So anyway, last night's interview, and it was god-awful. I'm sure it was effective for the people they were targeting. I am sure that, you know, Shine, the new communications director of the White House and former, like, sexual harassment whisperer from Fox News, knew what he was doing. And it probably, I assume, it connected with the female Republican voters they were going for. But it was just awful. Like, he just has a bad effect when he answers. And then I want to caveat that by saying, like, being good at answering questions doesn't mean you're innocent, and being bad at answering doesn't mean you're guilty. But it was just striking how he was unable to give real answers, and like he kind of grimaced.
So wait a minute, was he actually, because I didn't watch the interview, but did whoever interviewed him at Fox, did they actually ask him about these allegations? Because I assumed that they just wouldn't.
Oh, they did. Like the questions themselves were like, you know, they weren't as softball-y as you would often get from Fox. I wouldn't say they were going after him hard, but there were real questions. His answers, though, were, I mean, most of the time he just said the same same words over and over again. Like, he wants a fair process. He wants a fair process. He wants a fair process. I think he said it like 17 times. And he totally dodged on the question of like, well, should the FBI investigate? He didn't answer that. But why it was interesting is that, like, he didn't just deny these assault allegations. He, like, went further and claimed, one, he never drank, like, in high school and college. He was not, you know, not that kind of guy. Two, he spontaneously, like, said, like, oh, I've never sexually assaulted anyone. And also, I was a virgin in high school and for many years after. Whoa, TMI alert, because that's got nothing to do with anything. Didn't need to know that? Didn't need you to share that? Not sure why you did share that, unless, like, you have this weird correlation in your brain of, like, chastity equals virtue, and that someone who hasn't had sex is must be telling the truth about a sexual assault claim.
Right.
And then it just also wasn't believable. Like, he denied knowing about, you know, the assault culture, the bro culture going on at, you know, both Yale and Georgetown Prep, which many people from those institutions were like, I was there at that time, and yeah, even if you weren't part of it, you would know what was going on.
Right. And a lot of people have come forward and said that he was known to be like kind of a drunk party guy.
His freshman roommate was like, he was frequently incoherently drunk.
Incoherently, yes. Like, to that extent.
Yes. And this is now the world we live in, where like prep town kids, like, recounting their childhood and like teenage antics is how we decide the fate of the nation.
So, okay.
Go us.
The crazy thing is there's even more to the story. And that is this, that after the Deborah Ramirez story broke, then Avenatti got activated.
Avenatti was like, someone's talking and it's not about me? I am not comfortable with this. I must be part of this news narrative right now. So we still have no idea what it's about. Until we do, I'm not even going to care about it, because God knows what the hell he's up to. He's up to promoting himself. So
he basically tweeted that he has a client who has more information. He didn't say allegations. He said information. And it could be somebody that went to school with him. He said that it's a woman who has more information. It is not Deborah Ramirez. And that she would like a chance to also – this person would like a chance to testify at any investigative hearing. And
I bet it's Judge's ex-girlfriend.
Mark Judge. Yeah, okay, so we'll see how the Avenatti thing plays out, but can we talk about Mark Judge? Because like Saddam Hussein, he was pulled out of a hole, I think, yesterday.
Mark Judge is a misogynistic frat boy who never grew up. You know, he's on the run now.
He sounds like an alcoholic, too.
He was. He's sober, has been for a long time. And his attorney cited that for why she told him to get out of town, because he's an alcoholic under stress. No, the attorney told him to get out of town so he could dodge a subpoena. Let's be real. That's what's going on here, in case it came.
Wait, was he subpoenaed? He was not subpoenaed.
No, but in case
he's not been subpoenaed. Okay.
Now it's going to be really hard to subpoena him. So
why?
Because he skipped town. He's in hiding somewhere in Delaware.
No, but a reporter found him.
Yeah, but like on the ocean. Probably moved again. Like he is clearly trying to hide from a subpoena. So it's not likely they're going to issue one. But if they did, they're probably not going to get him to show up in time.
But can't they serve the lawyer?
No.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I thought they could serve his legal representative. Okay.
So he's probably not going to show up. I mean, they're not going to probably ask him, but I don't think at this point we're going to hear from him on Thursday. And
maybe you mentioned this earlier. Is Dr. Ford testifying or not this week?
She is, right? On Thursday.
On Thursday.
She testifies first, and then he'll testify after. And then they'll probably
Is
go
it
ahead
going to be
him.
In closed session? Do
no,
you know?
It's
will
it's going to be open.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, she's
That's brave.
And, there's a whole, obviously there's so much going on here, and there's debates about like whether behavior from your teenage years should matter many years later and how much it should matter. But to me, the disqualifying factor is that whatever your feelings are on that, and I have mixed feelings as well, the fact he's lying about it now is itself absolutely, unquestionably, undeniably disqualifying.
Disqualifying.
But he seems to like just be... The way he's approaching this is going to make it interesting on Thursday, because there's so much evidence that he did what high school boys sometimes do, which is drink and be inappropriate. And his claim he always respects women has already been refuted, because in his high school yearbook, he and other football teammates made comments in their yearbooks about being like the Renate alumnus. And it turns out that Renate is a woman who, side note, has the most badass name ever, Renate Dolphin.
she does.
That's amazing. And she actually signed on to the letter, the 65 women who signed off for Kavanaugh. She was one of them. Right. She has now withdrawn her name because she found out that in high school, the boys that knew her had put in their yearbook Renate Alumnius, obviously trying to imply that all slept with her.
And she's saying that that's a lie. She's saying it's a lie. So it could be that he was just one of those stupid little punks
saying something
that's not true. And I think that's possible. The thing is this, you know, I understand what you're saying about the question of does it matter what he did when he was 17 or 18 or whatever. And I know the kinds of things that happen at frat parties. But what happened to Dr. Ford, I don't like to me, there's a distinction between that and what happened to Deborah Ramirez, which is that she literally felt like she was. That it was like planned. The music was turned up. She was literally held down. That was a clear attempted rape. I mean, if the allegations are true, it was violent. It was even maybe life threatening because she thought she couldn't breathe.
And he didn't. It only ended because Mark Judge interfered.
Jumped in, right? Right. He did not end it. And then now you also have evangelical leaders. Stupid shit. I think it was Graham. I don't know who said it. One of these idiots was just like, well, he's a good guy because he didn't complete the act.
Okay. I saw that.
For me, look, if a 17-year-old boy is arrested for attempted rape, that will follow him around forever. If he's arrested and convicted of it, can be tried as an adult. That is consequential to me. That's not just a boy being a boy, a kid being a kid. I don't know if you can be arrested for, you know, getting drunk and jiggling your junk in front of a girl. I don't know. Maybe. Depends on how threatened she was. But yeah, you can be arrested and get convicted of attempted rape, which is exactly what happened here, apparently.
So, you know, right. Again, if it happened, what Kavanaugh is disqualified and his approach.
Can I ask you this, Susan, why do you think the GOP is fighting so hard for him? It's not like they have a plenty deep bench of other conservative judges that could do the same things that Kavanaugh can do. Why do they just continue to fight for him? They could just be like, done, move on to the next one.
I think they don't have time to get one in before the midterms. And although it's likely they could probably still pass one during the lame duck session. They may be I don't think they're confident that if they don't get Kavanaugh through, that they have time and resources to get the backup through. And I think that, so do you remember like a few weeks ago when this first started coming up, there are all these White House statements being released, like unofficially, like sources say Trump like doesn't really care about Kavanaugh. He's happy to cut him loose and go on. I mean, those seem now like clearly bogus statements. Those were like trying to shape media narrative and like suggest that Trump isn't that, like, he's like, whatever, on to the next one. No, that's not the case. Trump is fully invested in Kavanaugh. And I don't think it's just because, like, you know, it's him and like sexual assault allegations. He's like, they're all false. They're all untrue. They all don't matter. It's also because Kavanaugh is the single best person on the bench that would.
We'll save him. We'll protect him.
He is the best possible person on that bench who would oppose, is likely to give Trump support he needs. So that's why Trump wanted him. That's why he disregarded McConnell's very sage advice to not do Kavanaugh. Right. Too late for that.
Which actually goes to another part of the story, which is that apparently the Senate Judiciary, the Republicans, they got this Ramirez information apparently last week. Mm-hmm. And that's when they started saying, we just got to push this thing through. They knew it was going to come out eventually. So about an hour ago, Trump tweeted, quoting Rush Limbaugh, you can kiss the midterms goodbye if you don't get highly qualified Kavanaugh confirmed. All right. Well, what do you think? So I saw that somewhere else, too, where people are saying, well, I actually saw something different. Somebody tweeted about it was a story or they were doing their own analysis that if the Republicans confirm him, push it through, that they're actually going to hurt themselves politically, but they might be willing. They might be willing to spend. I can't imagine a single senator like, I will give up my career for this appointment. Really?
I can't. Some of them have been looking to overturn Roe v. Wade for their whole careers, and this is it. Kavanaugh is the most unpopular nominee, like, in history. I think he's already gone below Bork, which is saying something. So this is not a move, like, you know, not, like, confirming him is not a move that's going to be electorally popular. That's not the motivation here. The motivation is, like, if they don't do this, they may lose their chance to overturn Roe v. Wade. That's what it comes down to.
Okay, well, let's see what they decide to sacrifice here. It's Kavanaugh or their own careers. All right, well, thanks so much for updating us on what's going on there. It's so embarrassing. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after
after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.